We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from five-star app Meditation Studio and Muse, the personal meditation assistant that helps you learn to meditate. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle. Join us each week as we introduce you to authors, experts, and thought leaders who share their stories on how meditation and mindfulness practices have the power to change our lives. To get started meditating on your own, you can download the Meditation Studio app in the App Store, where you'll get over 500 original and exclusive meditations by leading experts on everything from sleep, stress, and anxiety to happiness, leadership, relationships, and much, much more. It's like having a little inspirational coach in your pocket when you're facing any challenge. And if you have a minute, check out some of my new meditations on the app. It was so much fun to record them. Any comments, reach out to us at untangle@meditationstudioapp.com. Today's guest is New York Times bestselling author Jake Knapp. He and his co-author John Zaretsky are obsessed with the idea of redesigning time with the goal of changing your mindset and your schedule so that you can fully focus on the things that will have the biggest impact overall. Jake spent 10 years at Google and Google Ventures, where he created the design sprint process. In his new book, Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day, he shares his four-step system for improving focus, finding greater joy in work and in life, and getting more out of each and every day. It's really about the small shifts you can make in your day that will help you to intentionally make time for what matters most to you. Now, here's Jake. Jake, welcome to Untangle. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Patricia, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I don't know a whole lot about this topic, make time, how to focus on what matters every day from your perspective, which is as a Google design sprint creator. Would you say that's sort of the inspiration for this?
That's definitely where a lot of the ideas for this book came from. And the design sprint is a process I created while I was working at Google. I worked at Google for about 10 years, and the design sprint was a process that I used first at Google and then working at Google Ventures with the startups who we invested in as a way for a team to get away from what they were doing and for 1 week focus on an important project. And it's sort of step-by-step process. And we could experiment with what was the best way to help everybody, both as an individual and as a team, focus. And so in this book, Make Time, my co-author John and I, who worked with me while I was at Google, we sort of tried to apply those ideas to what you do as an individual in everyday life. So how can you focus? How can you draw your attention to the most important things? And that's what Make Time is all about.
Let's talk a little bit more about a design sprint. So you take people out of their work environment, and you did this with Googlers and with people who were part of the Ventures group?
Google Ventures, people who worked at the companies we invested in. So for example, we invest in companies like Uber and Slack and 23andMe and all kinds of companies, healthcare companies, all kinds of startups, usually tech startups. And so we would work with them and they'd have some big thing they were working on, some big new project or something. And we would go in and for 1 week, we're sort of like, okay, you're not going to do the normal thing. For this 1 week, this team of people is going to work together and we're going to follow this checklist, this sort of recipe that we've come up with for solving the problem and deciding which of those solutions is the best and building a prototype and putting it in front of customers. So you accomplish what might be normally months worth of work in this really condensed period of time, but we also wanted to make it not a recipe for burnout. So really a good experience and a positive outcome for the business as well.
Is it an intense week or are you trying to sort of inject space in their brain so that people can be a little more creative about solving problems? How do you inspire these hugely amazing ideas that come out of this?
Well, it's both. It's a combination of intensity and space. And actually, I think that's something that's really important in this idea of Make Time, the new book, is that attention is kind of the fundamental element of human existence, what we pay attention to. You can say time is all we have, but really that time isn't all the same. Days might go by when the experience sort of blurs by because you're doing the same thing over and over again. Maybe you're not paying attention. Maybe you're distracted. And then sometimes you can be hyper-focused and you're recording lots of memories and things are almost time seems to slow down. So it's really attention that's so important. So in a design sprint or in Make Time, when we talk about what happens in a day, some of the things that we think were the most important, just strategically for a business, but also for like an individual, like the things that really matter to you. When you're in those things and you're doing it, you are hyper-focused. You're super like in the zone. You're in what we call laser mode. And it is intense. I mean, it can feel good, but it's intense. You need also to have space and you need to have quiet and rest in order to have those times of focus. And they do complement one another. And it was important for us and something that I learned the hard way running these design sprints, because it's a recipe that I refined over the period of many, many years. And in the beginning, I asked too much of people, I asked focus for too long, days that went on for too long, or asking for them to go through too many tasks at once, or even like eating the wrong kinds of foods or taking breaks that weren't long enough. And those things negatively affect your ability to get into that really what we call laser mode.
Yeah. You also talk about the fact that like in life, sort of outside of the design sprints and these environments that you're creating, that most of our time is spent by default, sort of what's the next thing that's in front of us? What do we check off our lists? And I'm just so curious, how can we be more creative? It does seem like so much time gets wasted. And our brains, when we do task after task after task, we don't even think anymore. We're just kind of moving through things. And I just wonder how we can really be creative if that's how our days are going.
Totally. It's challenging. And I think that the hope is that really things are pretty out of whack normally.
Right.
Like the way that things are is pretty out of whack. And so the hope is that the promise of that, the opportunity is that because they're really out of whack, can actually make some small changes and put them back into whack or like back into more balanced, more like positive frame pretty easily, we think. And that's sort of what a big part of the book are, these 87 different tactics, and you're not meant to do all of them. You sort of pick and choose the ones that you want to experiment with for yourself, but they're small shifts that you might make without having to create a zillion new habits or reinvent your life, that just kind of put things a little bit less crazy and kind of change some of those defaults. And so, for example, let's look at how things are for many people by default. By default, when at work, and for many of us, other people control our calendar, or at least other people can propose meetings to us or invite us to meetings that we have to go to. So if you're in an office environment, a lot of times your time is not your own during the day, during 5 days of the week. So that's the default, is at least in the culture at Google, this was the default. Somebody puts a meeting on my calendar, invites me, like, I'm going to try to go. I want to help them. So yeah, I'm going to try to go.
Right. And they just put it on your calendar.
They can put it on my calendar, right? They can see my calendar. They can see when I'm available and they just invite me. Okay. So, and I'll try to go. And then people will email me and I want to help them. So I'm going to try to reply as quickly as I can. And I'll reply to everybody who is on the email. So everybody's in the loop. And I'm going to try to be as responsive as I can to help my colleagues. And if somebody sends me a message, instant message, I'm going to try to get back to them as fast as I can. I want to help. That's good. And that's our default, is we want to be helpful and we want to follow the culture. There's also a cultural thing in states, and I think it's a little bit less of just genuinely about being helpful. It's a little unfortunate, but we have this culture of busy. It's, of course, you know, if somebody says, oh, how are things going? I'm seeing a lot of people who I haven't seen for a few months. And it's really hard to not say it was busy, because that's the only word in the English language that we have for it was good. A lot of things happened. So we kind of feel like we have to be busy or say that we're busy a lot. And we see other people talking about that. And so we feel like we got to do as much as we can. So there's all these defaults that push us to be really reactive to the calendar, reactive to our inbox, and then also reactive to the fact that other people seem to be frantic. And this sort of defaults, the set of defaults that mess us up, it doesn't just stop when you like walk out of the office. There are defaults in our devices. And you get a phone, if you get a new smartphone, it's got email installed by default, and it's got the web browser installed by default, because it's amazing. You can do those things right on this little tiny device that's in your hand. That's amazing. But why is it there? And now that it's available at all times, it's like, well, I should be responding and checking that all the time. And of course, since that thing can have Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and the news, breaking news, Netflix, games, all these things on it. Of course, since it can have those things and those things are free, well, I should probably have those too and be totally on top of those at all times and reacting to those. And so we talk about in the book how there's these two really big defaults, what we call the busy bandwagon, which is all that stuff that happens at work. And then on the other hand, the infinity pools, which are like all of these things that have an infinite amount of content, all of these apps and shows we can watch and all these amazing entertainments and distractions. And they just sort of tug us in two directions. What happens is, if there's something that really matters to me in a typical day, I have to be able to break away from reacting to those defaults, from just ping-ponging between those two things, the infinity pools and the busy bandwagon. I have to stop reacting and I have to start putting what matters to me first. But the good news, I think, is that you can start to make some shifts in the defaults that radically change the dynamic of your attention.
When you say shifts in your defaults, so people are so addicted to the habits of doing these mindless activities, like checking. Some of them are mindless, some of them aren't mindless, but they all seem to be equal in that we just keep doing them. How do you...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to Untangle.
Break away from what doesn't feel like a distraction. It feels like your normal routine. So very difficult to just sort of stop doing that.
Right. Yeah. But one of the things that's really powerful, and for me, this has been a huge one, is that the phone has so much power. The phone is with us all the time. It just consumes a huge amount of attention and fragments our attention to a huge degree. But the smartphone in and of itself is not a bad thing. I grew up I was a kid in the 80s, kind of messing with computers and learning how computers worked. It is just phenomenal to me still that you have this supercomputer in your pocket that, I mean, it's mind blowing. It's crazy. And if you go back to the frame of mind of somebody who grew up in the 80s, there are so many things on the smartphone that are amazing that aren't infinite, that don't have this infinity pool problem of distraction. There's actually this incident that I describe in the book. This was really like a key moment for me. A few years ago, I was like sitting on the carpet with my sons and they're playing Trains, and it's in the evening and I'm kind of playing with them, and suddenly I realize, and I don't even know how this happened, but I have my phone in my hand and I'm looking at my phone, and you know, and the reason I realized it is my older son is like, "Oh dad, why are you looking at your phone?" Not like to call me out or anything. He was just curious, like, "What's going on?" And I was like, "I have no idea why I'm on my phone. I don't even remember picking it out of my pocket. What's going on? I've been working so hard to try to be as productive and reacting as fast as I can at work so that I can be home and be present with him, with both my sons. And here I am on my phone just reacting. What's going on?" And at that moment, and this is kind of a big turning point for me with the kind of thought process or framework that's in Make Time, I was just super mad at myself. And my reaction was, I'm going to delete all of these apps off of the phone. So Instagram or whatever, I'm deleting Facebook. I'm deleting Twitter. I'm deleting every single game or entertainment or news app or anything that I feel like distracts me on here. And then I was like, I got on a roll and I was like, okay, I bet I can disable the web browser, the Safari on my iPhone. And I like went into the settings and I set the parental controls to on myself so I could take it off. And then I figured out how to like delete the email account. And this was really hard because I worked at Google and I actually worked on the Gmail team. So I'm like, actually though, I don't need to have Gmail on my phone. I won't be quite as responsive, but let's see what happens if I take it off. And nothing's left on the phone now except podcasts and maps and the weather and the camera. I mean, actually like a pretty amazing set of things. If you go back to the 1980s, like that's still a remarkable thing, but it didn't have any of those distractions. And by shutting those off, it was amazing what that did for my attention. And I think it's because now so much of our expectation of what's going on day-to-day life is that we're on the phone all the time and that we're kind of checking in all the time. And even just by shutting that off, that opened up a huge amount of quiet in my days. So that's 6 years ago and I still don't have that stuff on my phone. And I still get like a new phone every time that I still love. I have the iPhone 10. Like I love the new devices and I love there's plenty of things that it does that are amazing to me, but just not that stuff.
It's a cultural thing too, yeah. Right? Because a lot of people wouldn't be able to take email, for example, off of their phones because the people that they work with are expecting immediate returns.
Well, that's an interesting thing. There definitely are situations where you can't do that. I don't want to say like everyone can take it off, but a lot more people can take it off than think they can, because a lot of the expectation that we're going to reply right away is something that it's like an unspoken contract. And a lot of the stress is actually self-generated, I think, for most people. That was certainly the case for me. I thought I had to have it all the time, but what was I really doing? And periodically I'll be traveling or something and I'll have to put email back on my phone. And I'm so surprised at how just honestly crappy the experience is of checking email on my phone, because I look at it and I see that it's there, but I can't really do anything with it. I can't usually type like a proper reply. And so I'm just stressed and I constantly am like, oh, I'll just look and see if there's something new. And then if there is something that I have to deal with, it's just like stress. And if I do reply, it's like a quick, like a not very well thought through thing, or like, or I have to stop what I'm doing. I mean, it just explodes my brain. It just nags at you. But, and there's this, oh, it's like now I'm really on top of things. Like if I get an email, no, right away. But for most of us, it really doesn't matter. And some things will happen that are not great. There will be some little things. And this is Tim Ferriss talks about this idea of like letting small bad things happen. And I think that's a really good way to describe it. You have to be willing to let some small bad things happen. But it is amazing how few small bad things happen, how small they are if you step away from that constant tether.
We're going to take a little break to give a shout out to our sponsor, Chosen Foods. We love this company because they make super healthy, mindful, nourishing foods. I'm personally in love with their 100% pure avocado oil and their pure oil sprays for cooking. Their sprays have just one ingredient, avocado oil. So good for you, and you can use it for anything. Head to chosenfoods.com/untangle and use promo code untangle50 during checkout to get your 50% discount off of your entire order. What a great company. Now back to our show.
Well, I think you have to recalibrate your brain because it is initially going to nag at you not to respond to something that you know you have responded to very quickly in the past. And you're retraining everybody that you work with too. So it's probably a whole process that has to happen to really get to that place.
I think that one thing that's helpful, and we talk about this in the Make Time, is telling people, maybe doing an expectation shift. And I think that a way that you can phrase it that's really honest and helpful and I think works quite well. And I did this when I was first trying to kind of downshift. And we talk about this idea of slowing your inbox. It's like not that you're going to like stop doing email altogether, but getting it off your phone if possible. And wherever you use it, not expecting that you're going to reply to people right away, but trying to do other things in your day first, putting email off as long as possible. And if possible, even going days without replying to people. Because people will find other channels to reach you if they know that that's the expectation. And so I think sending out an email or in some cases, even setting an out-of-office responder and saying, I'm focusing on a really important project right now, so I'm not going to be very responsive on email.
Yeah,
and the best way to get me is something else. And a very important project, you don't even have to say what it is. But that's the fundamental thing is when we are so reactive, when we are on top of it, the cost is we're not doing more important stuff. Yeah. We're not really getting into that deeper focus.
Yeah, I really like that because I mean, I do like the idea of letting people know with an auto reply or something that says, it's as if you're saying you're on vacation, but you're like, I'm on a very important project. You'll probably hear from me in the next 7 days or just giving people some sense that you've heard them.
Yeah. Even if you don't say anything, I mean, I think that it's thoughtful and often it's a very freeing thing to enable people to experiment with this, to say it. But even if you don't say anything, I feel like we all have friends or colleagues who are not very responsive on email, who we like or who we work with and it works well. And it's just because we've learned, oh yeah, that person is not going to get back to me so fast. Humans are pretty smart who pretty quickly like figure out what the deal is. Oh, if that person, the best way to talk to them is to do something else. I guarantee that that lowered response time, it not only feels better, it not only gives you your mind back and your attention back, but the result will be better work or better attention for your friends in real life. If you're not as responsive to them on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, but you actually have more headspace and more time to meet with them one-on-one, the quality of things gets better when they're not interrupted constantly.
Well, and I think that's what you want to communicate, right? That's really the important thing is that you're making time for the really big things that make a difference in your life and in their lives too. So I want to get back to, you talked about that you and John, your co-author, spent a lot of time experimenting with your own habits. And I'm curious, what was that like? What habits? What was the hardest habit to change? And how did that sort of inspire a lot of these different tools?
Yeah, well, the two of us are real dorks. And so I think that a lot of times I realize now that when we're talking about these experiments that we did, that it sort of sounds like, I would assume if somebody else said this to me, like, oh, you wrote this book, you did a bunch of experiments, you probably had this really clear-cut plan doing these experiments so that at the end you would write the book. But the reality is we've just been dorks for forever. And we've been doing weird stuff and trying things out. An example for me was, it was a habit that was really hard to set for, was exercise and figuring out what to eat, just like figuring out how often I should exercise, what kind of exercise I should do that I would actually do. And a lot of this is based in the fact that, you know, I talk really tough about the apps and everything. It's really hard for me to form a habit or like do something that I know I should do. So a lot of make time is about, look, don't feel guilty about this. You're going to fall off the wagon. This stuff is kind of hard to do. We think these little techniques kind of make it easier. Anyway, the thing that made it easier for me to establish like an exercise habit and to not eat sugary dessert after lunch every day and these things that are obvious was keeping this sort of spreadsheet where every day I would measure my energy level. For like a year, I did this and I can't even remember why I started doing it. I think it was because I felt like I had no handle on why I was tired or had days when I was stronger. It was just about the time I'd started working at Google. And I felt like I really needed to kind of step up my game to be able to work with all these really smart computer scientists I was working with. Every day I had this little calendar thing that would pop up and I had set up for myself and I had connected it to a form. So there was a link. I'd click the form and I'd fill out, it's like a questionnaire I had set up for myself. And the results of that were that, I mean, I just would go back every few weeks and look at my answers in a batch. And I would see things like today, my energy level was low. I didn't exercise that morning, or I exercised like too much. Or I would just notice these little correlations. I ate 2 brownies after lunch and actually now it's like 4 p.m. and I feel like pretty horrible. I drank too much coffee and I drink like a lot of coffees and then also my energy seems low. Or I drank sort of 1 coffee and now it's good. I mean, they're obvious things, but I feel like we are bombarded with things we should do, behaviors we should have. And it's very hard to actually make the connection of this behavior when I do it myself has this effect on my personal body and my energy. And doing these little sort of daily experiments and measuring it started to make that connection for me in a way that was believable. And I started to realize, like, this kind of a change can, the small thing here might make a big difference.
Because you were tracking it.
I was tracking it. And it was about me, right? It was personal data. It wasn't this large scale study of university students or something. That's a big part of make time too. Actually, we say, like, hey, the first couple of weeks, at least, that you do this, just at the end of the day, like, reflect back and notice what you did, what you tried, and did it work or not? And what might you change for tomorrow? And
a word from our sponsor, Happy Mammoth. This is the company that created the amazing supplement, Hormone Harmony, and they are dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients like herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors, especially those chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. They're offering our listeners 15% off the first order at happymammoth.com using the promo code UNTANGLE. So if you're tired of hot flashes, night sweats, low moods, poor sleep, you get the drill. The things that put your life on hold, you will want to check them out. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com with the code UNTANGLE. Now on to untangle.
I think just creating that idea of the loop, but the simple idea of this leads to this for me is really helpful.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes you more thoughtful too, because you get to reflect on what you've actually done and how you feel about it. So let's get into the heart of the book, because you talk about these four steps that you suggest we repeat every day. And since I read the book, I've been working to highlight what is the most important thing of the day.
How's that working for you?
Well, I have to get into the habit of doing it, but instead of having a whole to-do list, I just pick the three things that I really want to focus on, the high priority things. And the other thing is, usually they're just about work, but you talk about them having this blend of urgency, satisfaction, and joy. So that makes me think about them a little bit differently, because I put in something that is more joyful for me than just finish a content production plan or whatever else is next.
That could be joyful too. I mean,
it is,
you know,
joyful.
Who knows?
I love it. I do. I love it.
Yeah.
But talk to me about that. How setting your highlight, and then you talk about laser and energizing and reflecting. So let's make that easy for us to understand.
It is a framework. So I talked about there's all these tactics. They kind of hang on this framework. And the framework is that every day at the beginning of the day, you set a highlight. This is kind of your intention for the day. I'll talk more about these in a second, but at a high level, you set the highlight for your day in advance. You then, when it's time to do that highlight, you are going to get into what we call laser mode. We've talked a bit about that earlier, but it's really about removing distractions. And when you remove distractions and you have that thing to focus on, then you're able to get into laser mode. You're able to really get into that deeper level of focus. And then energize is the third part. And so energize is really about reminding ourselves that the mind and the body are like a big part of our ability to do the things we want, have attention on the things we want. And of course, this is kind of obvious, but there's a lot of sort of methodology or tips and tricks out there around this sort of topic of productivity. And I really don't like the word productivity, but there's a lot of talk about that. And it usually doesn't talk much about physical energy, mental energy, that kind of thing. So a lot of what we're talking about in that third part of the book is, hey, these little shifts that you can make in your mental and physical energy, they have a huge effect on your ability to put your attention on what matters. And then lastly, the fourth part. So it's highlight, laser, energize, and then the last part is reflect. And that's what I just talked about, kind of at the end of the day, looking back. But to circle back to highlight, it's really about, as you said, it's this idea that in the morning or perhaps even the night before, you're looking ahead at the day and saying, when this day is over, if someone asked me, oh, what was the highlight of your day today? What do I want that to be? And just getting intentional about where you want to be at the end. What's going to be the memory that stands out, or what's going to be the thing that is the most satisfying or perhaps the most joyful, or in some cases, just the most urgent thing. There's a sort of a pragmatic way to look at this, which is for many of us, we've had this experience of going through the day. This happens to me, and it still happens to me. I've written this book and it still happens to me. I go through the day and there's this one thing that I really know I must do. Like, it's the most important sort of urgent thing that's on my list. And at the end of the day, like, I haven't done it. And I'm like, oh God, I'm just kicking myself. You know, like, how did I not do that? How did I respond to emails and do all these other things and not do that thing? So that's the pragmatic or urgent way to look at it. But really, a lot of times, this is a way to our promise in the book, what we hope to give people is the chance to make time for the things that really matter. These sort of things that you think you might only be able to get to someday. Someday, I'm going to work on learning a musical instrument, or someday, I'm going to have the time to spend more time with my kids in the evenings and be more attentive, or whatever it is. You're going to try to do a little bit of that now. And that's what really often brings a lot of joy or satisfaction. So the highlight is something that's bigger than it. It's not a task. It's 60 to 90 minutes. So you're going to try to create that sort of space for 60 to 90 minutes. And when you set that highlight in advance, then you start thinking about, okay, well, where am I going to find the time in the day to do that? And we have some tactics for creating the time or finding the time in your schedule, even if we know we all have busy schedules. And a lot of the time in our days gets wasted. It gets dissolved because it's fragmented, because we're tugged by the busy bandwagon and the infinity pools and we're reacting. And so part of the idea is that not only can you make time sometimes by just nudging things out of the way or knowing really clearly what your priorities are and saying no to some things, but you can also make time by just being less distracted and being more attentive.
You talk about that your book is about wholeheartedness. And you also talk about helping people sort of find what they're passionate about so that they build more products that are made with love or with joy, as an example. And how does that happen? Like, just sort of on a bigger level, because when you talk about even the first step, which is highlighting, if you really go to the big, big picture, it's finding out what you're passionate about in life so that you know what matters and you're not simply on autopilot or responding to what others ask of you.
I really am a strong believer in the fact that if you start to make some small changes in the right directions, that a lot of things can cascade from that. That's been my experience, and I've seen how that happened with teams. And the third part that, that I was going to mention of the sort of testing out of this make time process is we had 1,700 test readers, and have heard back also over the years from blog posts we've written about this stuff. A lot of people have adapted these things, and even a small piece of it. One thing that I learned from that experience of testing with a lot of people is that many people will just take one piece of it, or they'll make their own formula. So whereas with the design sprint, we had this one formula, it always worked for every team. With make time, it's like everyone will create their own formula, but little pieces, I think, start to unlock this idea of, yeah, what's in your heart, your attention, what's true to you. And one of the things we say in the book, and this is, I feel like a fraud talking on a podcast about meditation and mindfulness because I'm no expert. I'm a big believer in meditation, but I'm a sporadic meditator who's constantly falling off the wagon and trying to get back on. But it's the idea that I think is so powerful, and it's already out there. Other people have already talked about it, but we think we brought it into the book because we think it's important, is that if you are finding your work hard, if you're finding it's a struggle, you don't have the energy, that a lot of times throwing yourself into it can unlock energy. I mean, sometimes you need to rest. Sometimes it means you need to get away. But sometimes it's actually, you need to go more all in. You need to stop holding yourself back and really go for it. And in a way, that's the fundamental principle of this idea that before I react to everything the world is pushing at me today, I'm going to pause and say, what do I think matters? And I want to make time for that. I'm going to preserve that and protect it and do that first, so that I'm kind of, what's coming from my heart comes first. And yes, eventually I'll have to react to the world. I can't be probably in this projecting mode the whole day. But like, if you even do that, it is amazing what can sort of cascade and build from that. I think it's critically important. I obviously have spent a lot of my life building software products. And there's this tension between the fact that software products are, they cause so much of this problem that we have with attention. I also know that it's been there before too. I mean, people used to be distracted by television. I mean, we still are. Before television, we're distracted by the news. There've been things probably over the last 200 years that successively have been fighting for our attention. They're just getting better and better and better. But while I see a lot of challenge with what technology is doing to our attention and to the ability to be wholehearted and to the sort of keeping us in reaction mode, I'm also incredibly optimistic about technology and about what it can do for us. And again, we're talking on a podcast about meditation.
Yeah.
You know, you guys have a meditation app. I think meditation apps, it's like a remarkable way to unlock something that's otherwise very difficult to access for most people. There are lots of examples of things like this that are very promising and very good for the sum of human happiness. that technology can bring us, but it comes with challenges too, and we have to figure that stuff out. So when I'm most optimistic about this book, and I hope it will help some people to make their days more meaningful and put the focus on things that matter. When I'm really optimistic about it, I hope that it will help folks who are in the technology industry who read about it and think about this idea of redesigning the defaults to make them more about what we care about. I hope that it's a less critical look at the tech industry than a lot of the backlash that's out there, but that it also makes people feel like, yeah, if we build our products in a wholehearted way, if we actually practice this in the way we work and put the thing that's most important first, maybe we can get back to what matters the most for our customers, for the people who use this. That's when I'm optimistic about technology. It's because hopefully those things happen more and more and more. And it does start with the fundamental thing of people at their work, and this includes the folks who are building tech products, have to be able to work in a way where they have attention, where they actually can stop and think, and they aren't constantly reacting to metrics and noise.
Yeah, I completely agree with you about technology. And I like to think that we have the skills and resources and ability to use technology for the greater good. And this is part of the way that we can do that.
I think that it's been, in the past few years, there's this rising backlash against many different forms of technology.
Yes.
Phones, social media. And I think that that backlash is very important. And there are a lot of people who are bringing attention to abuses of our attention. That criticism has to happen. But it's also extremely important that we stay optimistic about what the technology can do, because we are not going to guilt everybody into a better future. We're not going to guilt ourselves into a better day or a better life. We have to be really optimistic and put what could happen on the table and be wholehearted and honest and reflective about what do we have to do to get there to that thing that matters. And I feel like if we can stay optimistic ourselves, and when we think about technology and what it can do for us, the possibilities really are amazing, but it's vitally important to not totally dwell in this negative realm.
I completely agree. Well, I hope everybody grabs a copy of your book.
And, thank you.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful that you were able to be on our show today. Thank you so much, Jake.
Oh, thank you, Patricia. It's been really fun speaking with you, and I'm so happy that you asked me on.
Thanks so much to Jake for being with us today. You can find his book, Make Time, How to Focus on What Matters Every Day, at all major booksellers. If you have a minute, would you give us a review or rating? It helps a lot to get the word out. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to download Meditation Studio in the App Store and check out Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.